welcome to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two games by the people for the people and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Refunct and Invisible Ink.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry about the delay. I had some travel, some unexpected travel, and Nick moved.
Yep.
And that's, as anybody who's ever moved knows, that's hard to, hard to function while you're doing shit like that.
Yeah. Luckily, it all seems to be pretty settled now, so should be smooth sailing from here.
Yeah. This gets us off sync, so we're coming out the same time. We were supposed to go every other week with File Underwater, and now we're every week.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I'm sure we will have to
punt we'll a fix week it
again.
At some point.
Yeah, we'll fix. Like, we'll fuck up again and have it go back a week. Let's talk about Refunct.
Yes.
Nick, tell me about Refunct.
So Refunct is a 3D platformer. It's a very short, breezy, cheap game. I think it's like $3 on Steam. It's also available on the Humble Store. And looks like it was released October 16, 2015. It's really good. I saw a speed run of it just kind of casually watched while I on the last GDQ. And then you suggested it, and I was like, yeah, let's check that out. But I wasn't watching well enough to really see all what was going on, and it was a speed run, so it's just someone going super fast.
Yeah.
But it's a real good little experience. And actually, it's like, it's some of the best 3D platforming mechanics, like in terms of wall jumping and stuff. Like, that's not, doesn't play out very well in most 3D games, and I feel it's real smooth and nice in this game.
Yeah, it's like a parkour game, weirdly enough. I've never actually played Mirror's Edge. Like, I keep meaning to. I know it's like one of the, it's a pretty big game.
Yeah.
It never goes under $20 for some reason, or I never catch it under $20. So I should see if I have that, because I've always kind of wanted to play that game. But that's, the first big game to get a lot of attention for doing that kind of parkour thing. And this is kind of the same tradition. It's a pretty different game. I had no idea it was that old.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
Because it's really like up now. Like, yeah. I think somebody got into it. I know the video games hot dog guys started passing it around, and then Brian Wade, who bought it for me, thank you, Brian, is really evangelical about it.
Hmm. Well, it's still getting updates. There's an update just in January.
Maybe that's something. Maybe that something tied into that has made it kind of in the zeitgeist again.
Yeah.
So in this game, you have this kind of wall jump. It's 3D platformer. More or less first person, you have this wall jump and a slide, so you're fairly mobile. And really the kind of noteworthy things about the game is one, there are no instructions in the game. You're just kind of set on this series of kind of floating platforms. There are buttons, you want to press buttons because there are buttons. And as you do, it creates more platforms with more buttons.
Right.
And the kind of noteworthy thing about the game, other than it is just kind of nice, right? Like, it is it's a very peaceful. The music's very pretty. The game's really pretty. It's like a low pressure game, but is the way that it kind of directs you towards your next goal, and kind of without giving you explicit like tutorializing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just you only have a small little piece of the level. You press a button, and a new part of the level appears. Clearly, that's where you're going to go next.
And they do, like, the way it kind of draws your eye, like, you'll see just something move out of the corner of your eye that suggests that you look that way.
Yeah.
It's not a trick. It's not like a hunt. There is, and even a lot of times you can see your goal. You just need to figure out how to get there.
Right.
So it's not about, hidden information. The loop for it works. For me, at least, it also is a little like Qbert.
Yeah, right.
Because you're like tapping the platforms to turn them colors to like check them off your box.
Yeah. Which does that actually do something mechanically?
I think it's part of the 100% consideration.
Okay.
Did you hundo it, bro?
I got all of the achievements, so I assume so.
Yeah. A little ending thing happens. Oh, okay. It's very minor.
I wouldn't have known what the ending was if I hadn't 100, so.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I was like, oh, all the platforms changed. I'm going to touch all these platforms. So yeah. I believe I got them all. I'm pretty sure.
There were two buttons I couldn't get initially. So I was like, oh, I had raised everything.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the little floating spheres.
Little cubies.
Yeah. I couldn't get. So I'd raised everything. I'd gotten the kind of first ending. which we can talk about because it's a half hour long game.
Yeah.
And if you're, well, I guess, you know, if you're listening to this and you think you should, like, I think you should play it. It's $3. It's a half hour. It's really, really nice. This actually is kind of a thing to go into it without knowing, you know, because it's really trite, but I think it's cute.
Right.
So just know that this is a spoiler kind of thing. but afterwards you reveal the kind of camera pans back to reveal what you've been doing and you make a big heart.
It's cute. Ocean. Little heart.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's probably, you could, if you wanted to, you know, pretentious isn't the right word, but if you wanted to write a very high-minded essay, you could probably say that this game has something to do with, you know, the fact that you can kind of be focused on these individual labors without really understanding the big picture, like
right.
What, you know, what you're ultimately getting to.
Yeah, you have no idea that the whole level's a heart.
Yeah.
Until you get it all captured, because yeah. You just don't have that viewpoint. So, give me 1 second real fast before you start your next thought. I'm going to stop Hammy from playing with the goddamn curtain strings.
Hammy!
Okay.
So there's probably something this game, you know, you can make a read on about being about perspective,
mm-hmm.
You know, like you can be like super, super focused. Like when I was trying to get the last two towers, and I figured out the problem was actually pretty easy, or not the last two towers, the last two little spinning cubes.
Right.
I was just using a like kind of launcher. There are these like things that launch you up.
Right.
I was just using the wrong one.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I could just barely like not make the jump.
Right.
And I was like, what is going on? You know, like, what am I doing wrong? Maybe I just need to like jump at the very edge of the thing. And eventually figured it out. But, I was so focused on that that I had no idea. Like I wasn't even considering that there could be a context to what was being built.
Right.
You know, or yeah, that no, this could be a thing.
Not a clue. I didn't consider that in the least.
Yeah. So it's a really kind of nice surprise,
mm-hmm.
To it when that happens. And when you actually do get everything, there's this kind of like fireworks display,
yeah,
that comes up, and it's a very nice little moment.
I think the latest update, I think it used to end when you 100%ed it, and now you get the just kind of free roam portion, which I think they might have actually added for speedrunners so that they can beat the game and continue trying to find tricks and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
So apparently, if I remember correctly, the AGDQ runners said like the developers made some changes based on their feedback alone, like, hey, we are speedrunning this game, and you know, if this thing or this thing didn't happen or happened, it would actually help us out a lot.
That's really cool.
Oh yeah, cool.
So I really like the two other things too that I thought of when I was reading this is one, I really want to see what this developer does next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because this is so like, this is kind of a cute, it's a very slight game, and I don't say that as a bad thing.
Right.
But it's like, it feels good in your hands. Like the parkour stuff feels pretty good.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, really slick. And I have played Mirror's Edge, and it's like, it's more mechanically deep. There's more to it. This just works kind of instinctively. Like, mm-hmm. I jump towards the wall and hit another wall, and if I jump again, like, it just works kind of the way that you would expect it to, translating from the same platform and mechanics in 2D. Mirror's Edge kind of makes it so that there's more buttons to press to make specific actions happen.
Yeah, it's a little bit more fiddly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really would like to see them do something that's like, again, not like add guns to Refunct, but
right.
You know, just something that kind of takes this expertise and you know, non-tutorializing and stuff and does something with it. The other thing that I forgot to mention is that I love how this game uses achievements.
Yeah.
Because they're not really achievements. It's just the developer saying nice things about you.
It's just a way for the only means of the game, like communicating with you with words, is through the text and the achievements. And you only get them for picking up specific cubes. It's not even each cube has a message. It's just certain points in your collection percentage, I think.
Yeah. And yeah. Well, and the messages are all just like, you know, try to take some time for yourself during the day.
Yeah.
You know,
do what you love?
Yeah, yeah. It's very nice. Like, it reminds me. There's when I first moved to Portland, there's a mechanic shop down in Southwest called the Master Wrench,
mm-hmm.
that I think I've talked about before. Where their sign, they didn't use it for like, you know, special lube. It was always just these little parables. These little just like words of wisdom.
Right.
So you'd be like driving, there'd be this like greasy looking mechanic shop, and on the side in big letters it said like, never rationalize anything that feels wrong. And I'm like, that's really good. You know, like, yeah, my favorite one, when I first moved here, it was one of the first signs I saw when I moved here. It was this big sign that said, human dignity is more precious than prestige.
Wow.
And I'm like, this is so
mechanic
good.
Shop.
Yeah, like, good job, Master Wrench. I don't know.
Funny.
I wonder if the Master Wrench is still around.
I hope so.
Yeah.
For that reason alone.
Yeah, it was very good. It reminded me of that, like these little sayings.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I like this game a lot, and I think it's a perfect potatoes game.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the length of it. I love that you get to explore all the mechanics kind of naturally. Like you said, there's no tutorializing, and it just kind of works. Mm-hmm. It's very sleek. So I mean, real good job, guy who developed this is Dominique Greshoffer.
Yeah, Greshoffer.
So
yeah, let's move on to something more mechanically complex than that.
Yes, let's do it. Invisible Ink. So Invisible Ink, it is a turn-based isometric tactical game with roguelike elements. Every level is randomly generated and whatnot. It is available on Windows, OS X, Linux, PS4, and iOS. The Windows or the PC builds came out in 2015, PS4 April 19th of 2016, and iOS just October of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
It's super enjoyable. It's got this kind of Shadowrun-y evil corporation aesthetic to it. You lead a group of, like, you don't play any of the characters. You're just kind of this invisible hand that commands this group that gets, they were kind of like a spy agency who broke into corporations, very much like Shadowrun. But they got raided, some information got out, and so you guys are on the run trying to kind of rebuild and figure out who did this to you.
And kind of get revenge and save your AI that like allows you to be vital in your fight back.
Yeah, who's the AI is a especially important role. Like if the AI dies, you could, like, that's your guys' most important technology, and if the AI goes away, then everything is kaput. So
and it's really complicated. So that's the simple like overview of it, but the actual mm-hmm. game is like super complicated. I think it's one of like the like most systems-y games we've done for the show.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
Like the kind of going through it, like, so it's got that roguelike element to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's also got an element of really, really, and this is something that happens in rogues, but it's something this game does really emphasizes, is that everything, like things that would be included or things that would be part of the base game or base experience in this are things that are resources you have to win in Invisible Ink.
Mm-hmm.
So like things like if you start with a 2-man party out of 4,
right?
If you want to have another party member, you have to go succeed in a like difficult mission.
Yeah.
To get that. If you want to use a store, like the stores are located in missions.
Right.
Some of them like explicitly, like if you want to upgrade your AI, that's a specific mission.
Yeah, you can find, like, you can go on missions specifically to get a really good store or a really good AI market.
And even to get any kind of, like, you'll sometimes get something for sale just at your home base, but it's very rare. And one object. You know,
There's sometimes terminals you can find in other missions that'll sell kind of lesser items and lesser AI upgrade, well, AI programs that allow it to do certain functions. But the really good ones you have to go on a specific mission for to get a really good shop.
Yep. To get money to go do this, you have to do this. Even mm-hmm. down to, if you want to get a lot of money, you have to do one mission to get an item that allows you to go to another mission to use that item to get the huge bank.
Yep.
So it's just, you have to work for everything.
Absolutely.
And it's you have a limited amount of time. Like you start off with this kind of time limit of 3 days, where you have these 3 days, and depending on how far away a mission is, it can take a certain number of hours.
Right.
So you have this limited number of moves, and you're preparing for this final mission. But you're never going to be able to get everything that you want.
Yeah, so after those 3 days, there's kind of a turn, mm-hmm. Which changes the game in major ways and is a really difficult mission in itself.
Yes.
And then after that, you have another limited amount of time before, I believe, the big showdown. But I never actually got that far. I got beyond the turn and kind of lost my party before making it to the final showdown.
Me too. Like I didn't beat it. Steam says I have 7 hours. I feel like that's not right. I feel like I have a little bit more than that.
I feel like I put in at least,
yeah, it feels 10, like 12, nine, you know? Yeah, like 9 or 10 for me. And I got to the point after that turn where I think that it is too harsh for me. You know, like I don't think it's a mistake. I think that I think this is a good game, but it was harder than I wanted to deal with.
Yeah.
Because after that turn, they add another kind of coupon thing you have to collect, another goal for every mission.
Yeah, on top of every single mission, yeah.
And something we didn't really, you know, part of the way these system works together, which again, I think is actually like pretty elegant, is things, one of the other kind of core values of Invisible Ink is things are cranking up all the time.
Yes.
So every day missions get harder. Inside your missions, there's a ticking clock that sets things up to just get harder as you go.
Yeah, it's like every 8 turns or something, the security increases.
Yeah. So it's like you're constant, like every choice matters, which is obviously intentional and very cool. You know, you can't waste time. Mm-hmm. And that answers like a very specific stealth thing where like a lot of stealth games, a criticism of stealth games is that you spend a lot of time in a hallway waiting for guards to pass.
Right. And just inspecting their routes and all that.
You can't do that in this. Like, right. You have to take risks or you won't make it out in time, because when I did die in this game or lose an agent,
right.
It was because I let things get out of hand and there were just too many guards.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's just like, there's just no way to do this. And it's because I made inefficient choices early on,
mm-hmm.
You know, so that was like, there are times where like that happened and it definitely felt like my fault. There are also weird things that the game, I think, doesn't do the best job of signaling to you how important they will be. Specifically like daemons, which is another, again, there's tons of mechanics in this game. When you hack things like cameras and stuff, they can have daemons attached to them.
Right.
Daemons are negative modifiers. Like, they are pretty catastrophic ones.
Yeah.
There's not really a way that I found to get around them. So it's like, I have to hack this camera because I have to get past it.
Right.
If I hack this, then this is a daemon that spawns a guard like nearby.
Right.
Like, fuck, you know, like I can't really get around that. And daemons aren't in the tutorial, which bums me out. So it's like you get to the first level that introduces them. It tells you what they are, but they don't tell you like, hey, this is going to wreck your shit. You know?
Right.
I
think there might possibly be incognito programs that help you shut down daemons.
Yeah.
But more often, the only thing you really find is a terminal that you can hack that reveals what daemons are on everything, and then you can just kind of prioritize around that. So, you know, leaving behind maybe a little cash boost that would have helped you out, but you now had to leave behind because it would have spawned a daemon that would have screwed things up, or saving things that you must collect until kind of the very last step when you're almost,
and yeah, you don't
everyone's
mind.
Almost set to go. Yeah.
Again, though, that's hard because you reveal the level as you go.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard to do that kind of pre-planning.
Absolutely.
And the things you get for your AI are also random. So I didn't, I went to 2 of the shopping, you know, missions to get things for my AI. And I didn't get, anything that dealt with those.
Right.
So the random element, like there is an element that where you can just kind of get fucked with some things, you know, there's, maybe, on this mission, this randomly laid out mission, if you happen to go the wrong way when you first start and the actual goal is way at the other end, it's like, well, fuck, you know, like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make it back to that goal and then make it. And then usually the exit is on the opposite side. You know, things like that. So like there is that random element, which I don't mind, you know, but I also, it should be noted, like I play this on easy and it was kind of too hard for me.
I think the one thing that I was neglecting to do that I think the game is expecting you to do on the easier difficulties, like they kind of sell it as a crutch, but I feel it, the game definitely ties it heavily in, is that rewind function.
Yeah.
Like, if that's always available to you, I think on everything but the hardest mode, it's just the number of rewinds you get, it diminishes as you go on. So you might get none on the hardest mode, but you still get some on normal difficulty. And using that is, like, required to actually have any way of setting something up and then properly playing it out.
Because
if you don't have the rewind function, then you're going to run into something that would, if you're stuck with that situation, is not going to allow you to get out.
I definitely use the rewind when I ran into kind of fail states,
mm-hmm.
you know, but maybe there is a tactical way of what you're saying, like to use them early. Like you could use them to scout out a room.
Yeah.
You know, things like that, which is kind of mm-hmm. interesting. And I didn't do that. But on easy you get 5, which is pretty generous.
It's
and you can start the
sure.
day over too. On it's not like Iron Man style on
right.
On easy, but I would still run into these situations where I couldn't advance. So I think that there is something like wrong with how I'm playing. But I put it, you know, to put in 9 hours into the game and not get to the point where I felt like I knew how to play it,
mm-hmm.
Is like mildly frustrating. You know,
absolutely, yeah. absolutely. I felt that way about it doesn't, the mechanics of the game don't seem to emphasize, or the what's available to your characters, their abilities and weapons and stuff, doesn't seem to emphasize stealth in the way that actually successfully completing a level does.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you allow guards to, like, if you knock out guards, then they just wake up and go on hunt mode for the rest of the time you're in that mission.
Yeah, they never cool out, which is makes sense, because it's always weird in a video game where a guard's like, well, I just got knocked unconscious. That was weird. Back to my day.
Right.
You know, like, that happens every day. But it is, you know, sometimes rooms won't be set up for that kind of stealth either.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? And the one of the things about the game, and again, it sounds like I'm bagging on it, and I'm not. Like, I had fun with my time on it. It's mm-hmm. just, it's, I think it's just too hard for me. Like, I'm not lead
it's
enough,
hard.
You know,
yeah.
Is that, there are two things that I ran into a lot. One is that, like, when you do fail, you get experience points that unlock things for you, but they're all side grades. So there's no element of like Isaac or Rogue Legacy where it's like, if you're playing Isaac and you get through it, you unlock new items, mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of times those items are good. So you have a better chance of getting them on subsequent runs. So subsequent runs are a little bit easier. You know, like, oh, I beat the game with this character, I get this unlock for them.
Right.
You know, things like that that make it a little bit easier. Rogue Legacy is really like heavy-handed about it, but the game explicitly gets easier every time you can spend money.
Right.
This, they're just like different characters with kind of different specialties. Like, they're all side grades. So there's not that feeling of like making generalized progress while failing.
Yeah.
You know, all the generalized progress you make is through knowledge, which is valuable. Like, that's very cool, but it's really old school and really harsh.
And it's also, for your reward to be primarily knowledge, a game is long as shit.
Yeah, that's true, too. You can't rapidly iterate on this game.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't lose until, like, hour 9.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So, like, I didn't, that's 9 hours to put in just for a learning run.
Right.
To end up in a failure, and that's really discouraging. Like, something I talk about, like, all the time on shows on the network is, like, you know, you have to make it okay for the player to fail. And you have to make it possible for the player to kind of rapidly prototype.
Right.
You know, that's why, like, boss runs, you know, long boss runs in Dark Souls suck.
Mm-hmm.
Because I beat the boss, I'm like, man, I wish I'd tried this. Uh-oh, here's a 2-minute cool-off period while you know, it's never 2 minutes except for in the end boss of Demon's Souls. But, like,
right.
here's a long period where you have to kind of, like, you don't get to try that.
Right.
That's why Hotline Miami is so awesome. You know, or,
exactly,
like, one of the
yeah.
reasons why that game works. It wouldn't work with a 30-second loading time.
Right.
This even down to the rewind, like, the rewind takes a while in this game. That could just be loading times, like, setting everything up, but it gets frustrating just because it's like, I want to rapidly iterate, you know, in the terms of the whole game, you know, like what we're talking about, like having a shorter period to learn, and then also even down to individually in the scene.
Yeah.
You know,
I think I'd actually like it better if the rewards for each mission were higher and each mission was a security level one up from the previous, and so you only did like 6.
Yeah,
like you did 6 total missions plus the turn in the middle and the ending one.
Yeah, you it changes, you know, you're choosing an upgrade path,
right?
You know, that and all those upgrade paths need to be like viable for the end, because that's the other big complaint I have about this, or at least my experience with it, is that as soon as armored guards were introduced,
mm-hmm.
I was pretty fucked, because I did one of those like go get a weapons cache missions, because I was like, okay, I'm gonna need armor piercing. Went and did that, managed to find like one stun gun that had armor piercing like 2,
right?
You know? But the armor just like rapidly escalates in that last mission and the missions after the turning point. Like, there's like you get daemons that add to the armor of your enemies. There's one that's like and then daemons that add to the firewall, to the things you're gonna hack, and then there's guards where it's like their armor is equal to the firewall the nearby.
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh, this guard has 6 armor. Like the you know, the best looking thing I've ever seen. Like, I had one character who joined me for a little while that had armor piercing 3.
Yeah. I mean, there's some guards that are literally invulnerable to
you have to
evade them.
And the idea is you just kind of sneak past them, and you know, then I run into this thing where it's like, I don't have the action points for that because I was putting my upgrades into hacking because I kept running out of power for my AI. You know, like it's just that you can't win everything, which is so intentional, but it's like this feeling I'm getting right now of this kind of discouragement, I think is intentional. Like, it's supposed to be like, man, you can't win, the odds are stacked against you.
Right.
And there are people who will have this happen, get to this 9-hour point and just fail and be like, yes, you know, like I got my ass kicked. I need to conquer this, you know?
Right. Or I see what it's trying to get me to emphasize. Yeah.
And
right?
And I only, like I am not the first part of that. I'm only kind of half the second part.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I kind of get it. That armor thing, like, just like killed me. Cause it's, I didn't, you know, knock out every guard. You know, I understand that's bad form. But like, there's a lot of times where it's like, here's a small room with a guard in it. And the mission requires me to be in here for a few turns. You know, I'm not going to like do-si-do around a counter and do that raptor scene from Jurassic Park for like...
I 100% had to do that.
Yeah.
Like tons of times I had to just do-si-do around a room while I waited on, you know, someone else to get something else.
Yeah. I found that part to be kind of a bummer. You know, I didn't like doing that much. And I would rather just have a little bit more robust, you know, tools for knocking dudes out. You know?
I feel like I see where they're going because when you actually manage to... like get in and out of a mission and all you did was get one guard to be like, what was that? Like, yeah. That was all that happened was someone was confused for two rounds and everything else. No one knew you were there. No one, that feels really good. And towards the end of the game, like I was fully emphasizing move and had people who had abilities and tools that helped them to, you know, go invisible and such. That's how I had to do everything, was I had to kind of like spread out, fan out, find where my two targets are, right? The battery and whatever my actual mission was. And then try and beeline it for exactly those and find the best route to get from those back to the, or into the spawn point or the exit point, like as quickly as possible. If I stayed more than three security bumps, I was dead.
Yeah.
There was no fucking way out of it. So I would like, I was using rewind a ton just to find my points of interest. Because if I hadn't done that, I could not possibly get in and out of there in time before things got haywire.
I just think it's a slightly too much, you know?
I totally.
There's a thing where like, something we talk about with, we talked about it with puzzle games before, with Nick style puzzle games, like InfiniFactory and stuff, where it's like, I like games that have a large kind of spread of win condition where it's about how well you want to win.
Right.
You know, and this game doesn't feel like it has that. It's kind of got, feels a little bit like Advance Wars to me, where the optimal, like there's really one solution to this. And you just kind of have to guess it, you know, and you'll never get it the first time. You just have to keep failing at it until you eventually know what that one solution is. So it doesn't involve like that much room for kind of improvised, you know, play or kind of player expression. You know, like going through and knocking everybody out isn't really an option in this game.
Yeah, you know, like not to the extent that it
kind of presents that, you know,
exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, all my characters start problem. With an item that does this. Like, why is this not viable?
Yeah,
you know, for me, and it just that ended up kind of being a bummer. So it's like, I think it's cool. Like, it is a cool game. I think it is not for me.
Yeah.
And I want to watch somebody do some like really high level play of it. I want to see what it looks like to have somebody be much better than me at this.
Yeah. I was thinking about this. I was just watching the Game Center CX for Pac-Man 2.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it was right after playing this game, and I'm becoming more and more aware of the fact that there's games I simply enjoy watching more than playing.
Mm-hmm.
Like this game is probably going to fall into that category of, okay, now that I understand the base mechanics of it, I don't need to play it anymore, but I'll enjoy the shit out of watching it.
Yeah.
And you have to, you know, you have to play it enough to get an understanding of what someone's doing. But beyond that point, like, no, just I don't get the mechanical enjoyment of actually performing the actions, but I get the satisfaction of seeing someone do it right.
Yeah. Yeah. You can be done with a game without finishing it.
Yeah.
You know, and you can understand a game without finishing it. Like, it's just like, oh, I get this, you know, like I understand, I have enough context to like be interested in this and want to know about it without actually putting myself through it.
Mm.
You know, it's that kind of thing. Like, I feel like this is that for me as well. We're gonna have a brief spoiler section where I'm gonna tell Nick what happens at the end of this.
Yeah, because I didn't make it and I didn't look it up myself. So, yeah. But some admin stuff real quick.
Mm-hmm.
If you like the show, you want to support us and the rest of the Duckfeed Network, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
Absolutely.
Any little bit there will help and gets you access to some early access feeds and our Slack channel and other goodies.
Yeah.
Always the best way to support us.
Yeah. Ratings, reviews are very appreciated. And at the time you're listening to this, I am running my Kickstarter for my second book. If
yes.
you go on Kickstarter and search for Atomic, or you look at my current pinned tweet, or listen to any of the shows. The URL is a big nightmare because it's Kickstarter. But
it's Kickstarter, right?
I'm running a Kickstarter for my second book, second Power Worlds book, this time based on the world of Fallout. And it's going really well so far. But if you are listening to this and you haven't heard about that already, consider kicking a couple bucks. And it's not a donation thing. You're buying a book.
Right.
Consider buying a book.
Yeah, consider buying a book. Also, you can get some stickers and a game manual, like the first one. So
yeah, all kinds of shit. I love the idea of having like a set of manuals as well. I do several of these books and just having all these like fake NES manuals.
It's awesome. Yeah. And I'm super excited for Atomic.
Oh yeah, I'm hoping it'll be really good.
Yeah.
I really want to get to. I know this is getting ahead of myself, but the stretch goals are good. Like
yes,
I want
yes,
me and Jim Crawford. Because there's a Souls of Darkness LCD game in Frog Fractions 2.
That he put in there, yeah, yeah.
So we want to make another one of those that like looks the same. It'll be an executable, but like it'll be an LCD game as if right. that were a thing. And then
looks just like a Tiger game, yeah.
My friend Noah, who is an animator, we're gonna do a mixed cartoon real life cereal commercial. where yes. like somebody's eating cereal and a little cartoon guy comes up and talks to him about riboflavin and shit.
God.
I hopefully get to do that.
Yeah, I hope you do too.
Yeah.
So the only other things I would say is that, you know, we're these games all for the most part come from recommendations. In fact, we didn't mention it, but Invisible Ink was a Wygraphs dictated game from our last Duckstream.
Mm-hmm.
So he donated money so that we would play this game specifically, and thank you very much, Wygraph.
Yeah, and the next game we're doing Brigador, which is also a donated game.
Yep, that was Evan. So
which to me like is also really hard. I played a little bit of Brigador and it's pretty tough. So
I know that one's gonna be really rough to break into. I'm excited to try
I'm excited too. Like it's awesome. Like it looks really cool and feels really cool. Like it's weird.
Right.
It's a weird fucking game.
If you have any games you'd like to suggest for after we get through this block of stuff that we've been dictated to play, or if you have any small games that you think would pair well as a small potatoes game to go with any of these larger, much more involved games, you can hit us up on the contact form on checkitoutcomrade.com or on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or on Twitter @comradepodcast.
Absolutely.
Any of those places will gladly accept your suggestion. I'll add them to our list, and we sift through that every time we're trying to find something to pair up. So.
And let's do our brief spoiler section.
Yep, little ditty here, and Gary will tell us a little bit more here in a second.
So I've only read about this. I didn't play it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even watch it. So there could be more to this. I just read about it because, it's kind of funny. Like somebody literally was like on Twitter, said, "Did you see the ending?" And I said no, and then just spoiled the ending. Like after I said no.
Wow.
I have no idea why. Like, I mean, I don't care that much, but
it's
possible I would have cared if it was a different game. So it's just
maybe they knew it was Comrade and that we don't care as much. I don't know.
I might have. There's tons of stuff we do for. I would have been pissed if somebody spoiled the End of Tyranny. Like, there's tons of stuff we do for Comrade I do not want to have spoiled. So I have no idea why he did that. But anyway, when you get to the end, you find out that after you merge Incognita with the second computer,
mm-hmm.
She refuses to leave and has come up with a plan to destroy all of the mega corporations, and does so with orbital lasers, destroying all the mega corporations on Earth, killing, you know, kind of causing this worldwide apocalypse.
Yeah.
And then will not leave from the new computer, and then eventually the only person she lets out alive is the commander. The lady looks like the mom from Arrested Development.
Right.
Who's your lady? So
who's also exactly the same character as Mallory Archer in Archer.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. So your AI goes rogue and does your mission for you in like a really harsh, awful way.
Cool.
Kind of cool. Like I like how that contrasts with what you're, you know, because the values of the game are like, you know, like you don't kill people in the game.
Right.
You know, and they set that up systemically, but it's also like it's a nonviolent game. You're supposed to operate in between the cracks, you know.
Yeah, you have to pay for any actual killings that you do.
Yeah. And her the AI just being like, fuck that, like, and pulling out a bazooka essentially.
It's pretty funny.
Like, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's good.
And it sets up like a sequel where they fight, you know, where it's Invisible Ink versus versus Incognita. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's neat.
Yeah.
It's just again, I need to find a good let's play of it though, because
sure,
yeah, that's me. That's really all I got.
Cool.
And anybody who stayed here too, we should talk about when we're going to slot in a Torment episode.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have no idea. I mean, I haven't started it, and I don't know when I'm going to. But I mean, we have some big games to do, so I guess, you know, we can just pick a time and decide to do it in between some of this stuff if you'd prefer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it can come in before a dictated game, I think, because okay. It's like a special report. I'm hoping to get started on it this weekend.
Okay.
I don't know that I will, but I hope that I will because I want to beat Tomb Raider first for WoF.
Okay. But are you doing any other big WoF stuff right now, or is it like you don't have a big RPG until summer, right?
Not until summer. We're doing the other big game we announced is Dead Space. We're doing that okay. For our spring horror game.
So let's do it before we bleed into summer. But maybe after Brigador and Lone like Survivor, like, I think a smaller one. So
Lone Survivor is pretty short. May.
Yeah, let's do Brigador, Lone Survivor, and then Torment.
Yeah, I should be able to. And if we have to punt that, we have to punt it. But right. I want to beat it before we do the episode because it's one of these games. So
I will do what I can for sure.
Yeah, let's. That sounds good.
All right.
To me.
So yeah, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, take care.